Okay.
Good morning. I'll call to order our regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting for this Tuesday, September 8, 2015, and ask everyone please join the board as we honor America with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
First item on our agenda is public comment number one. This is an opportunity for members of the public to comment on items on today's agenda. Is there anybody wishing to do so? Seeing no one moving to the microphone, we'll move on to consideration of minutes from September 1st.
Move approval.
Second. Move a motion and a second. Additions, corrections.
Paul, I second it. He was just too fast.
Two. Aye. Clinton. Aye. Sanders, aye. Minutes pass. Personnel actions as listed, board.
Move approval.
Second. A motion and a second. Clinton.
Aye.
Two.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Personnel actions pass. Consideration of claims from September 10th.
Move approval.
Second.
Motion and a second. Toot.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Claims pass. Consent agenda board, please add road closure 1630 and please remove item number 4 and item number 3 for a later date.
Number
3 and 4, please remove for a later date as we don't have the documentation.
Okay, move approval with noted changes with the removal of item 3 and 4.
Second. Clinton.
Aye.
Two.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Consent agenda passes. No public hearing items today. Additional items. Consideration of resolution 1616, amending inter-fund operating transfers. On election day, we get to see Lisa Markley.
Correct.
That's always exciting.
So lucky for you. I would like you to just approve amending this interfund operating transfer. What we're doing is actually what we budgeted to do, which is move the money from the TIF fund to the TIF urban renewal to spend it. And that did not make the original interfund operating transfer. That amount didn't. So I'm raising the amount so that it's there.
Questions?
Seems pretty straightforward. I'll move approval of resolution 1616.
Second.
Motion and second. Further discussion? Lisa, anything to add?
Nope.
Two.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Resolution 1616 is adopted. Thank you, ma'am. Have fun with the election today. Discussion and consideration of proposed master matrix policy and procedure. Margaret James. Hi, Margaret.
Good morning. How are you?
Thanks for working on all this.
Yes.
So, by way of background, just since we're recording a public meeting, this was something that we talked about
in April. Mm-hmm.
And the board requested that we put together a group so that next time we get Master Matrix, we have a procedure to follow.
Yes.
You pulled that group together that we asked for, and you come up with a suggested procedure.
Yes. And it won't be a lot different from the way we did it before, with the exception of several department heads will independently score their area of interest, and I will gather that information together and will report it to the board on that date. The other thing to note is that when we first receive it, the group will review it to make sure everything is complete. And if it is not, at that point in time, we will return the whole application and the clock starts over, the 30-day deadline starts over. Okay? So that is different. And then as soon as we decide that everything is okay, that does not stop us from asking for small information later on in the process.
Sure, if we have questions, it's completely reasonable for us to ask for clarification.
It's just like well applications, septic applications, CAFO applications that come in, I want to be able to ask for small bits of information. But if it's a large, important thing, we will stop that proceeding right then and return it to the applicant.
Sounds
that's the main difference.
Help me just understand the rationale. From the old the way that we operated versus this will change. I mean, we still technically could ask for that, but it wasn't in a formalized process, basically. Is that correct? And we pretty much just left it up to your discretion if there was some clarification that was needed. So what we're really trying to do is to more for public notice in terms of what the process and the procedure will be. Is that primarily what we're trying to do, is just clarify a more efficient way to look at an application?
Yes.
And if there are minor questions that we're saying that, yes, we want to take that time to basically do that, and really it's a win-win for everybody. It helps us understand more clearly the issues that is supposedly in the application, as well as whoever the person who is submitting the request. Basically, I just wanted to ask you if I was looking at it the same way in terms of the practicality of why adding this little component is probably in the best interest of everybody.
Okay, so two main differences. There will be a team of people reviewing it.
Right.
Okay, that's one big change. And number two is we will review it for to make sure that we have everything. If we do have everything, we will put it on the board's agenda to show a receipt.
Okay.
If we want more information, a large amount of information, we will return the application to the applicant, and we will not show receipt.
Right.
Which doesn't start the calendar until we show receipt.
Yes. Right. Yes.
And so let's just be clear here, and Margaret, help me if we're achieving what we're trying to achieve. So two major goals, I believe, from this board in requesting this. The first one is to make sure that when we get a master matrix in, we have a clearly defined, very black and white kind of process for how we're going to score it.
Yeah.
We bring in as much expertise as we can to help score it. That was our first goal. I think we've accomplished or come close to accomplishing that with this. The second one is, in our previous process, while we have a great director of environmental health, we basically stuck her all the way out on this limb and then gave her a saw and said, here, saw this limb off right underneath your feet and let's go. And we don't want to do that anymore. We want Margaret to run the process and make sure that everything's pulled together, but we want to make sure that we spread out. Clearly, there's a lot of pressure that comes down on these things. The pressure is rightly on the three of us. It should be on the three of us. But it should not necessarily fall to one of our staff members to feel that pressure. And my hope is that by doing this, it allows you to do your job, but help spread out some of that inherent pressure that may come along with some of those things. Do you feel like we've accomplished those two things?
I do, and I really do appreciate that.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's exactly what I was trying to say.
That's what you said. I just
you just made it so much more confusing. That's all.
I think I understood what you're saying, Wayne.
I think it's a cleaner process. I think it will be more transparent. And there's really no guidelines for this. I mean, I've talked to county supervisors that do it in a similar fashion, and there's one county I know of that one particular supervisor scores that matrix themselves. So I think this is going to give us a better product in the end. Well, I think this allows our really good staff to do what we want our really, really good staff to do. Margaret, the challenge for you is when you were just relying on yourself to get this done, you could just kind of work it into your work program as you had time. Now you're going to have to sit down and really kind of schedule these things out, how it happens over that 30 days. So be prepared for that. That's the additional challenge to you, but I think the benefits outweigh that additional challenge that you're going to get.
Yep.
Anything else? If not, I would sure take a motion on this.
Move approval of the proposed master matrix policies and procedures as outlined.
Second. We have a motion and a second. I will just underscore for everybody, this does in no way removes the Board of Supervisors from our role in this. We're still the ultimate decision maker. This just parses out and clearly defines how staff's going to go through getting the scoring done for us.
Absolutely.
You move?
Yep.
Clinton?
Aye.
Two?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. It passes. Margaret, thank you for your work.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. No agency report, departmental report, information technology departmental report. Barb Steinbeck. Barb, it feels like it's been a long time since we've seen you. Is that right?
No, not really.
It just feels that way. All right.
It feels like it's been too short for me.
Oh, okay. I have that effect on people, Barb.
Yeah, I'm still having trouble with my laptop. I mean my iPad. Oh.
Good morning, Board.
Good morning.
Back in Information Technology. I'm here to give a quarterly update for the Information Technology Department. And it feels strange to be here because it should be Monday.
Yeah.
But I'm sure that we'll all get along fine. I wanted to give you an update on a few projects we've been working on. Number one that you deal with right now is the audio upgrade that's been completed. We've noticed a few opportunities with the wireless mics in that the batteries seem to go dead quite often. So
it's amazing if they don't get charged how that happens.
Yes, that is one thing. But we have put in fresh batteries as of last Wednesday, so hopefully they'll retain the charge a little longer this time.
Now, is there a way to determine, only I guess through trial and error, to figure out about how often they need to be changed? But there is no technology out there that gives you a scale that says batteries are running low or something like this?
Well, there are meters that you can put your battery in and it'll tell you how full it is, but
you
with rechargeable batteries, we had no idea the age of the batteries when these were installed. You know, they could have been from the factory. Now that we've replaced them all, we can have a starting point that we know how, and then the next time they go dead, we'll kind of have an idea of how long it will take.
While you're talking about that, and maybe you'll comment a little bit, any Paul and Rick and so forth, have we gotten any feedback from Shelley and so forth when the people in the audience now has maybe raised a comment and they didn't all come up to the table? But I noticed that in a couple of our meetings we've had just a couple people make a comment. Were we able to kind of pick up that, as far as you know, no real issues?
If anybody sits in the crowd, they are not getting picked up to be recorded, so they either have to have the handheld mic or they have to come to the table.
They still have to do that,
yeah.
And at some point, go from there. So what's the next step?
That would be what we did with this upgrade is upgrade it to the maximum capacity of the current system. It was an enhancement to get the type of now, we have different settings, of course, but to get what you're asking for, it would be a replacement. It would be a lot more money. So we're going to live like this for a while. I can't justify a $20,000, $25,000 replacement for something that I think we can get by for the most part like this.
Right. Okay, good.
Another project we've been working on, and it seems like the CLP conversion continues, but right now we're looking at collecting the old data that was in the old Lotus Notes system that two servers ago we used. And once we were told the statute of limitations on record retention, we had to go back and hire a specialist who could pull those records from backups we had. We no longer had machinery that would host those records. So we've got that all pulled. It's all together now, and ACS is helping us. They're creating reports so that if there is a request from Medicare, Medicaid, whoever, on certain information on a client, we can easily pull that up with the reports they're creating. So I think it makes me feel better that at least all this data has been retained and is now accessible. Tyler, content management, so this feels like something you should jump up and down and say, whoopee, we finally reached a point where it's completed and working. It works well for the real estate. We had also, as a sideline, wanted it to work for the sheriff's documents, too, so they could start reducing some of those piles. It doesn't do real well on the fingerprints and some of the records that the sheriff retains. However, we found that no document imaging program does a real good job on that. Tyler is working on some enhancements for that. We've also looked at another program that Solutions is promoting called Doc Locator. And a couple of us from the Treasurer's Department went down to Knoxville to view a demo of how they're using it. They've been using it for several months now. And, you know, the first thought was, gosh, what we're doing now is a lot faster. So Solutions has since gone down and made some adjustments and changes, and they said that part of the problem was the scanner that they used, and we wouldn't be using the same scanner. But unless Tyler can come up with some modification that will fit the records for the treasurer, recorder, and the sheriff better, we'll try to roll all those into a different program that Solutions is offering. So, and I don't think it ever hurts to have two programs that do similar things, because you can't put all your eggs in one basket. If one was down, then we wouldn't have access to the other. So we're exploring different options to make sure that they have what they need. And with the recorder, part of that may depend on their data, as you know, is in a different program rather than Tyler now. So it would be nice to have all that in the same program so that we could pull from it. Our networking projects, we've completed the Story Medical project. We got the test results, the maps, and the fiber layout that I attached to the contract and submitted to Story Medical, along with an invoice for the work that we paid for and are then invoicing them for. So, and I've spoken to Story Medical, and they're really pleased with what was done, so chop that one off. The DOT project, this was, if you recall, a direct fiber connection to the treasurer from the DOT. Once they got in there and started looking at our handhole again at the Justice Center, and this was something that we thought we'd never fill up, they noticed there was some fiber damage from the constantly opening that up and different fiber projects. So the DOT had promised us a new handhole, which is, instead of digging out concrete, would be cement lid that goes on that. But then they found the damage to the fiber, decided it wasn't a good time to create one of those. So as part of my capital improvement project that I submitted, it would be a cost to redo all of the fiber at the Justice Center. As it is now, we cannot add any additional connections because everything is full. Who would have thought we would have got to this point? 2 4-inch cables and we thought we were good. The E911 upgrade. This is something we've talked about a lot, and I mentioned before, the 911 IT group has met several times, come up with some different configurations, and found one that we liked. The cost would be between $150,000 and $200,000 for the entire project. We tossed around different ways to fund that. We've pared it down. We've tried to get it as low as we can, and now we're looking to submit that to the 911 board for a grant. And then there's also, we met with Jessica and got her input on whether this needed to be sent out for an RFP. So now we're at the point where we're happy that we've done all the research that goes into this. We do not need an RFP, as it would be considered an enhancement, and I did contact two other vendors to see if they could offer additional services to get this completed, and you know, they were like, you know, what's Champion One equipment? They had no idea. So I want to stay with a vendor who's worked with this and who's familiar with how it's been set up.
Just for clarification purposes, explain enhancement versus replacement of a system. Because I think if you're talking replacement, my mind tells me now you're spending a dollar threshold that you probably need to do an RFP. So I'm looking at the rationale here in terms of the enhancement, more or less.
The reason I'm considering an enhancement rather than replacement is the current system will remain in place, and this will be a secondary route that will be faster and allow more bandwidth. So I wouldn't consider it a replacement, because everything will still be there, and we'll just, this is just if the main configuration, if the main network goes down, it'll automatically fail over to the other network. So that's why I consider it an enhancement.
Good.
Does that sound right to you? That sounds good. Okay.
And the $150,000 and $200,000 that you expect something like this to cost, and you mentioned different funding strain and possible grants, but this is a responsibility of E911 board, correct?
Not G Group, yes. Okay. Story County, ISU, and the City of Ames all contribute equally to this. So currently trying to improve, of course, our wireless capabilities, and we're looking at some different solutions and I know the city does this. Aruba will offer the solution. It's when the patrol cars pull into the parking lot at the Justice Center, they're able to upload all their data wirelessly, remain in their car. What we've run into is originally when the mobiles were put into the squad cars, the user was going to do all the updates and everything themselves. Well, once Scott got on board, he started looking at them and found out that nothing had been updated since they were put in, which I don't have a problem with that. I think IT should have a role in that anyway. So this, he's getting all the laptops up to date, and so this new solution will allow them, when they pull into the parking lot, to, number one, download their data to our system, and number two, receive any updates that are needed. So we've come up with a couple solutions. I'm working with Leanna on this, and she would like us to try to get the cost down a little more. We're looking at a $3,000 Aruba cost for this. She found something, I think it was $300. You've got to weigh the benefits. Number one, the Aruba will be part of our system. There's not, you know, jumping through hoops trying to make it work. So we're still working on that, but exploring options to make sure that we get the best price. Some of you may have experienced last week, we're doing an antivirus upgrade, and what this will do, security, of course, in IT is always the top thing that you talk about. So this will improve our security, and especially what I like about it, it will improve the security of those thumb drives that people plug into their computers. And I know some people don't allow that, and I'm kind of on the verge of not wanting that either. You just never know, and I know one of the tricks that they laugh about is somebody will drop a thumb drive in the parking lot and put CEO's important files on it. And, of course, somebody picks it up, plugs it into their computer, it's got a virus. This is just a trick people do. I'm not saying it would happen here, but I don't want to be caught in that kind of scenario.
But can we control or should we control that thumb drives? Like, there are people that come to give us reports. Like to abort, and so we would have in this case certain people, if they go through the proper channels and we've got a certain dedicated set of equipment, can't you kind of control that a little bit better under that circumstance rather than making sure that the other departmental staff does not really use an outside thumb drive? Don't we have a way to?
There are certain systems and software that you can install on individual computers that will only accept certain thumb drives that are, say IT buys 10
right.
thumb drives.
Right.
They encrypt them, they give them a number, they give them a key code, so you can have software then on each individual computer that will only accept a thumb drive that has the specific key code. And then you know it's safe because nothing can be installed on that without passing antivirus restrictions.
So how critical are we looking at this futuristic moving into something like that?
I'm looking at it. I'm looking for acceptance. That's the big thing. When I came here, I saw a lot of things that were different from other places I've worked at and was told that there was too much pushback. For instance, when you leave your desk, in my world, your screensaver should go on within a minute, and you'd have to type in your password to come back. It was attempted here, and there was so much uproar, it was removed. But I think we need to move more into that and understand that this is for our own good. I know it's cumbersome and it's bothersome, but it's security, it's safety.
There's no question. Now, you and I have attended a few cybersecurity conferences and different things like that. The world today is far different than it was in the past. And I think, you know, people need to understand that this is not done to make their life difficult,
No. But
it's to provide certain safeguards that need to be put in place because of the potential of cyber breaches and so forth.
And I'm not going to fool myself by thinking we can never be intruded on, you know, if the IRS and Blue Cross Blue Shield can be hacked, but I want to make it as hard as possible. And someone else said, well, you know, open records policy, what can they get? Well, they can get employee information, which we don't want that in anyone else's hands. So look forward to changes in the future.
Okay, good.
We're also doing a printer fax evaluation. And what this is, we've gone to all the buildings and located all the printers and done on cycle count, and then we'll return in a month and double check. This is to see if we've got printers in the correct place and maybe see if we can do some reduction. I know printing is a hot topic because it's expensive. And I don't want to see any more inkjet printers around. That's the worst way to spend your money. But it may be difficult. I've worked in places where there's a special printing area where you type in a code and receive what you've sent to the printer. There's different ways we can handle it. The way this building's set up, it might be difficult. But we can certainly, I think, find some opportunities to save some money there. And it doesn't help that there's different contracts with different companies. I'd like to see us under one contract and see some cost savings there. So that's something that we're looking at. Also, we're looking at alternative fax solutions. We get the CenturyLink long-distance bills, and the faxing is just outrageous. We did not port the fax numbers to the IP phone system simply for the fact that I wanted to have a fallback in case of an emergency disaster recovery solution. At least on your fax lines, you can plug the phone in and still make a call out if your VoIP phones go down. So we need to find cost savings there. Scott has come up with a couple different programs that he's used in the past. One was Ring Central. Don't know if you're familiar with that, but ultimately, I think we're moving toward an e-fax solution where you do all the faxing from your computer. Mm-hmm. And if people said, well, I want something to be faxed and I want it to be secure. I don't want anybody else to see it. Well, how many times do you see things laying on the fax machine that haven't been retrieved and probably shouldn't be laying there? So we're looking at different things for that. Kyle and Scott are working on camera upgrades at the Justice Center. As you know, they've added cameras and... when we started looking over the quote, I noticed $16,000 to run cable and put ends on. So Kyle and Scott are doing that. Scott's learning a little networking, and so is Kyle in the process. But we're saving $16,000 by doing it ourselves. I think that's a no-brainer. Why should we hire someone else to do that? Just a few other things. As you know, Shelley's been having a lot of problems with the Civic Plus Agenda Center, but... even as this morning...
Never complained. We don't ever
know. And we've talked to them and talked with them and had them shadow her, and the only thing they can think of, and she's following the instructions just as it was given to her when she was trained, but what they've come up with is after she, on Tuesday mornings when she wants to update the agenda, she unpublishes, deletes, and then goes out of the program before she comes back in and adds the new agenda with the road closures, and that seems to have worked. No problems this morning. Yay, knock on wood. So hopefully, if that's a simple solution, I'm all for it. That's great. The new fiber connection was installed at the Justice Center in late June, at HSC in late June, and the old DSL was recently disabled. I wanted to wait and make sure everything was stable. No loss of service has been reported, and I haven't heard if it's better. What do you think, Jessica?
It is definitely
a lot faster. Good. And then the last thing I wanted to leave you with is the intranet that's been the buzzword around here. A lot of people are anxious to see something like that. We did buy that module from Civic Plus, and they recently contacted me, and they're trying to put together a couple examples that they want us to look at and see what we think. And they're going to do a few new color changes. We're going to stay with the same green and blue, but we're going to make maybe green the dominant color instead of blue, like on a regular website, so that you can tell the two apart. And this is an external site. It's not attached to our website, so if our website goes down, the intranet won't. But once we have agreed on content and a couple things we'd like to see, I'd like to send out a survey to all the users and see what they like. And then in a few months, we'll be able to start adding data, and there will be training. Any questions?
No. Good. Barb, thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, good things going on.
Other reports. Discussion of Iowa DOT environmental assessment for the improvement of U.S. Highway 30. Darren and Jerry. Good morning, guys.
Morning.
Good morning.
Okay, what we've got here is the DOT has sent out an environmental assessment report for Highway 30. That's the two new proposed interchanges, one in Ames and one by Nevada. What we're doing here is I'm kind of reviewing it for kind of a general overview of the transportation impacts, and then I'll turn it over to Jerry. You can look more into detail on zoning impacts and land use. this is open for comments almost for 2 months now. They're going to hold a public meeting October 15th for the public, and then our comments are due back by November 6th, so we have some time to get comments in. Let me start. This is the overall corridor that was studied, 1 mile from Ames to Nevada. Now, part of this report, they did eliminate options and narrowed it down to one proposed, not really an alternative anymore, it's their preferred option for each interchange. This is the old one that they eliminated. This, I think this one had been in a long time where 6th Street, S14 extended up to 6th Street, and there are some ramps here. One of the bad things about this is it created, I think, 4 bridges here, so the cost was pretty high. This was eliminated, and it only had an overpass here at Airport Road. It didn't have a way to get on. Nevada's expanding their industrial out here, and they wanted to make sure they had access to 30 there. So this is the preferred alternative. You can see there's now no way to get on 30 at 6 or S14. You're going to have to come up and go over here to get on. But this is
now that's coming north to south, right? It's the way I'm looking at that now.
Yeah, north is at the top, you mean? Yeah,
right, okay.
This is S14 heading northbound.
And what street is that? Where they've got to make the go east?
Over here?
Yeah.
This is Airport Road.
This is the airport, and this is 6 going in Main Street. And
there's no street where the new bridge is right there.
Okay.
So 6 will now, there'll be a new street built for 6 that crosses 30.
Yeah.
But the only two access points for Nevada, 230 then, will be Airport Road and 19th Street.
Correct. Okay. And I understand this is Nevada's preferred option also. And they have also kicked in, I believe, $2 million to help pay for some of these extensions of Maple, help with the cost of paving for that.
So Nevada's preferred option is one that takes Main Street off access to Highway 30. See, that's interesting to me.
I don't think it was
not without controversy.
Yeah, it wasn't unanimous, but okay. I think that's what they ended up with.
Yeah. That's nice when your Main Street can be a dead end.
Exactly, why not?
Go through some of the pros and cons of this transportation-wise. First of all, it's much safer. We had the S14 intersection here. It was always dangerous with the hill, with the railroad bridges. It was 2.5 times the state average in crashes, so it was more than the state average. So they're trying to improve safety here was the whole reason behind it. I want to make it clear that this is the first I heard of it, but as soon as this interchange goes in, 600th will be closed at that point. I originally thought they'd have to wait for the whole corridor, but they've included the closure of 600th in this interchange, which is in 2020 in the DOT's program now. So that will happen right away. Whether that's a pro or not, closing that, that will help with our dust issues, but it will create some issues for farmers getting up to the co-op.
Well, what it means to me as much as anything is we better be having some conversations with Nevada, and I think it's Nevada's decision, but it seems to me that Airport Road and Lincoln Highway, you better have some kind of traffic signal there or you're going to end up with trucks lined up. I mean, the number of trucks that you're going to have getting off of 30
right
there, going up to Lincoln Highway and trying to turn it, you're going down to the co-op, Lincoln Way Energy, or DuPont. And so you're coming over the viaduct if you're coming out of Nevada, dropping what speed limit's 45, I think, but most people aren't going 45. Seems to me we better be thinking about some kind of traffic control there. Darren, I don't know what, if any, input we have in something like that. I know right now we have half of that. No, we don't have any of that intersection, do we?
Nevada annexed the entire right-of-way out to the ethanol plant. So, yeah, that would be a Nevada issue. The other pros... safer crossing at 610th for the farm vehicles. Like I say, it'll be much safer just crossing over. You see farm vehicles out in that median sticking out. It just kind of scares you. So it'll be much safer there with an overpass bridge.
Right, but we're going to hear from lots of farmers that aren't going to like the idea of 600th, 590th closing.
Right.
And they're going to have to go either all the way to 6th Airport Road or into the new 580.
Correct. And the semis won't have much issue with the airport, but the larger implements, the wide, like the curb and gutter, will have some issues getting up and down airport roads, so that's an issue for farmers. And then already touched on that.
Is that our issue, or is that Nevada's issue, or is that DOT's issue?
A portion of that road is still ours. So
of airport.
Of airport road. Is.
Good.
So, yeah, I'd say we're involved in those discussions with the DOT.
And so is there an answer? I mean, do you knock the curb and gutter off?
That'd be very difficult to do. The drainage isn't the greatest through there anyway, but they ran curb and gutter into tile, which wasn't the greatest idea, but that area is so flat, there's nowhere for drainage to go. You'd have to create some pretty good ditches and buy some more land. I think it probably could be done, but the water would just sit in those ditches. It wouldn't go anywhere for a long time. But it'd be better than having it up on the road, so it is now, probably.
So you're basically talking about the turning lane off of 30 and Airport Road.
We're talking about
trucks and large vehicles.
Just Airport Road itself.
It's not wide enough to handle some of the farm implements.
Okay. All right.
Some of the cons of this option would be increased traffic on South S. I think that's going to be one of the biggest impacts to the county, because if you're coming northbound on S-14 and you want to head east on 30, you don't really have that option anymore. So I see a lot of people cutting across South S down here, which is a gravel road that gets you up to this interchange over here. Right now you'd have to come way back over here to get on. Some people may do that, but South S has always kind of been on that tipping point for us on paving it or not.
That's 200, is that 250th?
Yeah, I believe so.
That's good. The bridge that was replaced out there years ago was replaced with the intent that that road be paved.
We talked about paving it 10, 15 years ago. And kind of
it goes over to Airport or Country Club Road.
Yeah. Okay.
I see that getting a lot more traffic with this option. The other option with the ramps, people could get on there, but not with this option. Farm traffic will need to use Airport Road. We already discussed that with the curb and gutter. S-14 has a new route through town. It used to be designated right up through town, a little straighter, and connect in with northbound S-14. Now it'll have to come way over here, I assume, to airport and up. But not a huge issue, but signage has to be changed, and it'll be harder to follow. Nevada traffic, we touched on that a little bit. They're going to have issues with Lincoln Way and Airport Road interchange. It's probably going to be a stoplight condition or something, but that's all Nevada's now. And I also see Nevada having some issues with more traffic kind of heading over by the Score Park and everything, because this traffic won't be able to get on here, so there'll all be more traffic heading over this direction to get on 19th Street interchange, I would expect. And lastly, we'll have some maintenance turnarounds at 600th Avenue, closures on both ends, so mostly snow removal and grading issues. We'll have to create some driveways for turnarounds. It's just more of a nuisance, but it can be handled. Any more questions on this before I switch to the other interchange? This is the interchange at 580th. This is the option they eliminated, where R70 kind of came straight up through here and was just offset a little bit from the existing R70. This got into some wetland issues here, and there was more land that needed to be purchased. That's one of the reasons they eliminated this. But I think the main reason they eliminated it is because all this traffic over here created by the churches and the DOT had further to go to get on now. They used to get on at Sandhill Trail. So the new option moves it closer to all this traffic generator. Start with the pros of this. Safety again. This intersection at Sand Hill in this area had 4 times the state average in accidents, so this was a bigger safety issue than S-14, actually. So that will improve that greatly. I'll leave that one for Jerry to comment on. The development potential to the south as a pro or a con. We'll be losing ag ground. No increase in traffic on 250th. The old option, I was concerned about people just like 250th over by Nevada cutting across to get on over here. With this option, I think all this these houses will be able to get on much easier, so we won't have increased traffic on 250th. Closer to the church and the DOT, this traffic instead
instead of using Sand Hill Trail, we'll just have to travel a little bit further to get on at a much safer way to get on 30. Mm-hmm. Don't know. We have a lot of issues with dust on this back road that the church, this is private about to right here. That's all private church road, and then it turns into our public gravel road. We have a lot of dust issues on that and complaints. I don't know if that'll decrease the traffic that much or not, but I think the people that took that were the ones that were concerned about safety and getting on 30, so that it may help reduce traffic on that, I'm hoping. Okay. Less wetland impacts. And then closer to industrial, this industrial area has a lot of semis. Again, they were all going across that median or a lot of times blocking traffic as they pulled through there. It was a dangerous situation. They don't have much further to go to get on interchange, so they'll have a much safer way to get on. Some of the cons of this would be the R70 continuity will be cut off. Traffic will have to go over here to keep going on R70. I don't think that a lot of traffic continues up there because you can't get on I-35 on Lincoln Way. So I don't know how much traffic will be impacted by that. It won't be a lot. Brecky's area here, the feed store, and then the other businesses here will have, since they have a dead end, have to come on down this way to get to it. That will be difficult for them. And Brecky probably relies more on, passerby traffic, stop-by traffic, so that they'll be impacted by that. Farm traffic, again, be much safer with the overpass here, but it'll be a lot further out of the way to get up to the co-op from all this area down here. Mm-hmm. So we can close off 590th and 600th. Be their only option would be to come over here or use Airport Road.
Any discussion at all about access to Vetter and the Case IH Training Center, or are they talking about having to go all the way north to Lincoln Highway?
That's the latest, is they're going to have to go all the way around. That also creates an issue with this wood bridge here we have. Once that is closed off, I don't want to get in a situation where we're going to have to replace this, because then they will have no access. So if this happens, we'll probably replace this bridge out in the fourth or fifth year right before they do this. Because right now they have some heavy loads that are trailered into Vetter's, and they use Highway 30, but they'll have to be going over that bridge once they close that access off, too. So we'll probably be replacing this bridge, too, if that happens. The Lincoln Highway Corridor study, we used to have some baggage roads coming across here, but with Ames annexing out in the near future, we're probably going to be up to Ames what they want to do with that area. Like I say, they have the option of having developers pay for those new roads. But at this time, you might be able to comment more on that, Jerry. I think you asked the DOT what the plans were for a possible road there. But
Dan, I realize that, these plans have been on the docket for some time, and now we're having a public input and so forth. But at the end of the day, what do you think is really going to be the driving factor as to whether or not they go ahead with one of these or just leave things as they are?
I think the big driving factor was Nevada for a number of years wanting to get that interchange improved. But safety-wise, this is a more dangerous intersection than Nevada, so I think this is more a priority for the DOT, this interchange. So. Mm-hmm. And they're also looking at future traffic projections. They're projecting that traffic to really go up, and they don't want to see a situation where they have stoplights on Highway 30 when you're going 65 miles an hour. That's not a good situation to have. So I think they're kind of planning ahead for that. I don't know what, from the DOT's perspective, how important this is or what could potentially stop it. There's a couple houses here that are going to get purchased, one here and one here. Mm-hmm.
How is Sally Jensen going to get out of her driveway?
It's an either or right now. Either direction, they're going to have to build them a frontage road. Let's see, that is their house right here. Yeah, that's it right there. So they're either going to have to come. That's a level B road, so that's not a great option. They'll only be able to. Did they come if they'd be able to get on 30 there now?
No, just to the west and then south.
They have to go south. Well, that's not a good option. So right. That's a level B road for us. So that longer access road.
So take them all the way down to 600th, and then they have to go south?
Correct.
Okay.
That's all DOT though, correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Another con is that more payment for us to maintain all these side roads would be our maintenance, and they'll be paved, so we'll have to do snow and ice control as well. We do not know at this point how much of these side roads will be at the cost of the county, so that's a big question that I have. Already talked about Vetter's and the flexible-oriented access issues. It's going to be a lot longer way to get around. And we have the bridge issue that we'll have to address at some point. And at that point, I think I'll turn it over to Jerry, and you can talk a little bit more in detail about
it. Okay. Jerry, right before you start, Darren, the explanation that you're giving us here is a lot more thorough than what we generally get on the DOT when we have these public input sessions. And my biggest concern is that the citizens, the people that's going to be impacted by it, those, the way it's usually structured to me is inadequate to really address, you know, how this may impact them over a long run. Is there a role for us, for working with the DOT, to talk about, again, how we can restructure some of those presentations to allow opportunities for people to actually voice concerns? Usually they, you know, you have to, you look at the diagrams, you see all of this, you can submit written comments, but they really don't have an opportunity, because you learn a lot from just hearing other people talk about some of the challenges that they're facing. And I'm just wondering, is for something of this nature, is there a way that you and the two of you could talk to the DOT regarding looking at how to restructure that, those public comment sections?
We can definitely put that in our comments back to DOT, request something like that. Because even the Jensens, I talked to them a couple months ago, and they didn't know anything about this. They were gone during the winter meetings, and I sent them the plans. They had no idea up to this point this was happening.
Yeah, Ron called me, and I asked him to get the plans from you, so they did do that.
And there is another house at the corner of Airport Road and 30, that one that sits on the northwest corner. That's another full acquisition there, too, so that's another house that's impacted by this.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, Darren touched on the overall. We're looking at about 6 miles from the Mixmaster East to 11th Street in Nevada. We're talking about 6 roads being closed, 4 driveway accesses. And again, the 2 alternatives that they're looking at is alternatives 1 for the west end and alternatives 3 for the east end. I'm just going to talk a little bit about the zoning, land use, and then some of the specifics as with regard to how it might impact the specific uses along that corridor, and then just follow up with some of the points that were identified in the document. First off, the urban fringe plan, again, approved 2006. We've got 15 years left of useful life on that plan. Much of the project study area east of the interchange, as far as the land use right now, is agricultural and long-term industrial reserve. As you know from last week, the City of Ames is interested in proposing a change for that urban land use. They're proposing to change 1,100 acres from agricultural long-term reserve to planned and industrial. I've got a map to kind of show you conceptually what that looks like. Also, there's a node in that document in the southwest corner for highway-oriented commercial. But as far as the urban Ames urban plan, we'll likely see some annexation infrastructure improvements within the next 15 years, and then possibly as that gets going, we may see some other changes. Mm-hmm. To the east end, we've got the development plan, the tiers 1 through 3 surrounding the city of Nevada. It addresses proposed land use within that 2-mile zone. The point here is that with the Ames Urban Fringe Plan and the Nevada Tier System, both of those plans fully encompass this US 30 project. So this is the map. The city of Ames is shown in yellow. The city of Nevada is in white. The red thick line represents that 2 mile land use planning area. And then the tiered 2 mile district is shown to the west there. Again, the point is that those two planning areas fully encompass this Highway 30 project. So we're going to be working with Ames on changes that happen within the corridor and beyond. We're going to be working with Nevada on changes in that location on the east end. Details of the existing plan. The crosshatch area is agricultural long-term reserve, industrial reserve. The plum purple color is planned industrial. This is what they would like to change up. I've got a map to show you that. In that southwest corner of the mixed master is the highway-oriented commercial. The green, light green color is ag farm service. This is conceptually the area that the city of Ames would like to change up. It's shown in the purple. Represents around 1,100 acres. And it would extend east of the corporate limits of the city of Ames, which is shown in that red dashed line. Extend east to 590th Avenue. It would be south of the railroad tracks and just north of the US 30. They're also proposing to add additional ag and long-term industrial reserve with their request to extend that northward. As far as the zoning, Story County zoning map, much of the project area is zoned agricultural A1. There are 6 parcels that are zoned commercial, light industrial, 4 parcels A2 for agribusiness, 1 parcel is actually R2 residential. For the most part, along that corridor, outside of the commercial and industrial districts, much of that is agricultural land use, as you know, based on the prime farm soils there. We're likely going to see some changes with what's being planned with the city of Ames to change some of that to planned industrial. Within the existing districts in the commercial and light industrial areas, there are some areas for growth for the existing businesses. We may see some new businesses in those districts and also in the A2 district. So again, any changes that we might see for rezoning requests, subdivision requests, we're going to be working with the city of Ames on that west end and with the city of Nevada within that 2 mile zone. There's the zoning map. Again, the red represents the commercial light industrial districts. The green is the A2 agribusiness district. This is for the east end. Shows you the city of Nevada. Current zoning map. North of US 30, the blue or the aqua color is their general industrial district. You see that out on that west end as well, and there's some pockets of agricultural and residential zoning. Pair that up with their development concept plan. Much of this is shown within their current limits, their corporate limits, but this time on the north side of the interchange there that they're showing, it's business park. Outside of that is an industrial classification. The red shows up as a commercial proposed use. So we're getting into some of the specifics.
We'll go back to that one, Jerry, if you don't mind.
Yep.
Because that still shows the proposed interchange that DOT got rid of.
Right.
There, so the red commercial that they've got there has that old interchange, not the interchange up at Airport Road. Okay.
I think
Thank
that's
you.
Correct. Yep. A little closer detail shows you the proposed alternative one that they would like to go with. If they do go with this concept, the good thing about this particular alignment is that if they did line it up with the Sand Hill Trail Road, likely it would probably have taken out one or both of the churches that would affect the DOT location. We did ask them about the 575, the dead-end road. The comment that we got back was that this is conceptual. There's a concern about trying to hold out, try to look out for the good farm ground. And they said through the design phase, likely that wouldn't show up that way. The Caramoli, Brown Supply, Story County Vet Clinic have greater distance increases. As Darren mentioned, the Flynn property on the northwest side and the Simpson property on the southeast side of that intersection, they're proposed relocations for this interchange. The Flynn property is large enough, it's 32 acres. It's possible that they may be able to rebuild their home, depending on what the actual on-ramp and distance separation requirements would be. However, the Simpson property, it's a 1.5-acre piece. They're probably going to have to relocate somewhere. Better Equipment Ag Information Center, they've got the longest distance travel to go to this proposed interchange using 590 Lincoln Highway. Jensen property, as what was mentioned, they're still looking at options there, but they're thinking about having them go west or east on our proposed frontage road. This is the east end residences, for the most part, on 600th Avenue. They will have an increase in distance travel to the proposed intersection. Ruhlstedt's a 5.7-acre parcel. They're also a possible relocation, as Darren mentioned. Again, they may be able to relocate, build a new home on their parcel in the northwest corner, depending on how that all works out. However, for the most part, the existing uses on 610th Avenue, they probably benefit the most, least amount of distance travel, and will benefit from these on and off ramps. Flummerfeld, Consumers Energy, those uses and residences will have a greater increase to this interchange. And then also, I think it'll be a little more confusing to get to 6th Street to get to downtown Nevada. But again, as our understanding is, this is the preferred option by the city of Nevada. Some of the points that were brought out in the document, 1.5 total acres will be impacted. Mike with Story County Conservation did indicate that he may have some interest in hosting some of the wetland projects that could benefit Story County. Floodplains, 11 acres would be impacted. 223 acres of farmland would be acquired through right-of-way. They've indicated that of the, you know, they chose the two alternatives because of the least amount of impact to farmland. And then again, potentially three residences would be relocated. Other points that were raised, no businesses would be displaced during construction, and they'll have accesses open. They've indicated that there's no effect to habitat wildlife based on external sources, federal and state agencies that studied this. They're basically claiming, too, that there will be no non-farmable land areas, so they're not creating little small remnants. And then impact to farmland reduced during the design phase. And they're claiming that all the farmlands would have access to the roads. Some of these points, as far as the benefits, were raised in the document, as far as improved motor vehicle and overall safety, improved traffic circulation. With the interchanges, it should help with future planning along the corridor, along Lincoln Highway, as we work through the future years on future land use in those areas. And as Darren mentioned, they are planning a public hearing October 15th at the Crossroads Baptist Church. However, it does seem to be for public agencies and interested entities. So I'm not sure what that really means for public, the general public, but that's definitely something that we can get a handle on.
Go back now. Take the several slides that you just showed there. You don't have to go back, but I'm just talking in general. To me, that is much more conceptual and presents a clearer future use and connectivity than some of the larger scale maps that I saw in the earlier report. Will there or is there a way to have, I call it a printout session, or to, so that people could see some of the things that we are talking about here?
Are you talking about at the county? I mean,
yes.
there's always, you know, we can do all, you know, more.
And
you know, whatever.
I mean, and then from your standpoint, I mean, as I say, you know, we remember back when we were first talking about the interchange down the Elkhart and all the meetings that we went in years ago, and some of the concerns that came with even the truck stop and so forth. I still think that the majority of people there fully don't comprehend the direct impact to their livelihood and future uses. How do we help mitigate that by giving them more information to really take a look at and then weighing some of the pluses, the benefits of this? Because when you talk about right-of-way acquisition, obviously that's going to be something that the landowners or farmers in that area would be compensated for. But do you see where I'm kind of going here? I know for me personally, not being a landowner and so forth, I look for the most simplest way to show something that people can feel good about the role that we as the county and the collaboration with the state is playing, because it does impact their way they operate.
I do not know if the DOT sends out notices to individual landowners on this meeting or not. I assume the ones that are directly impacted would be, but we could find out who actually gets sent notices. It might be something we would consider with the county and try to get them.
And I guess my question comes to Rick and Paul. Am I creating more fuss than what is really necessary from your perspective? You know, I know you and I, you know, over the years we've attended those sessions, and I walked away
I've had conversations with several residents and landowners that live in that corridor that have been to the public meetings, and they don't want anything to do with it. They don't understand why, and I would be interested in what kind of numbers, accident numbers, we're looking at now at 580, since they redid that, and they've got an exit lane at 580. I would think that would have to improve the safety of that intersection greatly. I mean, I've covered my fair share of accidents at all those intersections, but they've improved those over the last few years. I mean, I just haven't talked to anybody that thinks this is a good idea. I mean, other than strictly from a safety standpoint, and granted, that's what the DOT is most interested in, but, I mean, if we're going to talk about the road to access better, I mean, we wanted to pave that first quarter of a mile because of the truck traffic. Now we're going to look at paving the additional three quarters of a mile and replacing a bridge on that road.
Right.
And so that's going to, you know, that's going to impact our outlook on our five-year plan.
Sure.
Darren made a comment about his concerns about the additional traffic on 250th south of Nevada, which is a gravel road that, you know, that occasionally I hear from people that, you know, when is the county going to pave this road? I think there's a lot of people now that go that way, that live down there, if they work in Ames, so they don't have to go through Nevada and the interchanges to get on Highway 30, they get on it at S-14. So, and that's going to impact our outlook on our five-year plan. So and it would be great to try to host a public information meeting, but we don't have any answers for them.
Right.
Unless you're going to get the DOT to come and agree to answer questions for people.
Well, then we've just got it. If DOT, okay, so we're not the decision maker on this. This is another one of those opportunities where we get to hear public comments, but we get to do very little with it. It just seems to me that a lot of this can be alleviated, a lot of the major concerns, because I'm hearing the same concerns you are, if they didn't restrict access at 590 yet. And so what I'm really struggling with is, I absolutely get why you would want to close down 600th with an interchange at 610. I don't see why you've got to close down 590th for the, I mean, it's minimal traffic
that's going to utilize that. Basically getting to Vetter and Case IH and then the Jensen Farm right across the street. Okay, so you're talking about one car a day coming out of the Jensen Farm? That's really going to create an issue? I mean, why does there have to be restricted access at that spot? The rest of it, the safety issue makes sense to me, Paul. It is 590th, and I can see the impact to us being that we would have to consider whether 590th south of 30 remains a level B road, or we were going to upgrade that. I know it's got some real issues to upgrade it, but I can almost see where most of the concerns that I think you're hearing and most that I'm hearing are alleviated by maintaining direct access along 590th, which basically becomes a farm road. Darren, am I missing the boat there completely?
Yeah, and I think from the DOT's perspective, when they put in new interchanges, that's just part of their internal procedures that has to be closed off. And how they designate that road, I forget what they call that road, but they designate it in a way where it has to have everything shut off according to policies.
Yeah,
federal guidelines. I don't know if that's negotiable in the DOT's eyes, but we could definitely ask and see.
Well, I mean, from the county's point of view, so I see a lot of problems with this. I see a lot of positives. I mean, the safety is a big deal.
Right.
I'm sure that when I-35 came through north and south, it impacted a lot of different traffic patterns, Paul. I wouldn't say that I-35 coming through was a bad thing. I mean, sometimes right. You need those kind of things. It just seems to me like we've got a unique situation sitting there on 590th that I think improves this overall plan if there's a way to maintain access. And even maybe the county stepping up and saying, okay, we're gonna improve that road south of 30 to really recognize that that's an agricultural area. There needs to be a good way for farming. The only thing that really concerns me is we're saying the airport road is going to be one of the major areas that farm implements are supposed to go north and south, and it's not built to handle.
Right.
It seems to me that we can address a lot of that by putting a new bridge on 590th, keeping it gravel, except for the area that we've already paved, improving the road south, 590th south of 30. That can be our role in this, and we still improve the safety of that stretch road. I just don't know if DOT would even entertain it, if it's all or nothing.
Yeah. Some of the funding tied to interchange, I think, is
demands that everything be closed down.
I think they said that in the past, but I can double check.
Well, okay, so 19th Street has an interchange here in Nevada, and then how far out do you go before you get at grade access?
Going east. Not quite 2 miles. It's the blacktop that goes to Maxwell. It's a mile. Just over a mile from 19th Street.
Yeah.
And then everything else is all ad grade. From there, it's there happens.
Right? Yeah. Except for Tama now.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, guys. Yeah, here.
One thing that I was going to talk about, but I forgot about it, is that the Vetter business, one thing they might be able to do is create through, like, easements, like a private drive type situation out to that north-south road as a worst-case scenario. I mean, it would be very long and, from a maintenance standpoint, but it would be a quicker way to get to that interchange.
Yeah, see, I don't know what kind of right somebody like Vetter or like the Jensen family has, but I do know that both of them are going to fully explore what those rights are in this. And I just think that this is worth a conversation with somebody at DOT to say, hey, is this absolutely hard and fast, or is there a mechanism to get something like this done? Because, Paul, unless I'm really missing, I think that solution alleviates a lot of the concerns that we've been hearing.
Right.
And still allows what I think is a really good project. I'm not sure I think it's a really good project for Nevada, but Nevada seems to like it, so more power to them. I think it is a good project for 580th and the church and everything that's going on out there. Okay, anything else that we need to talk about this morning? Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Appreciate the report.
You bet. Absolutely.
Next item is public forum number two. It's an opportunity for members of the public to comment on items not on this agenda. The board may not take action due to the requirements of the open meetings law, but we may do so in the future. Anyone? No one. Liaison assignments. Paul.
Pass.
Wayne.
Pass.
I'll pass. Announcements. Paul.
Pass.
Wayne.
Pass.
And I'll pass. Motion to adjourn.
So move.
Second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
And we are adjourned. Thank you, everybody.
Darren, I just sent you that.